Hello and welcome to part two of our podcast on our clinical spotlight project, Deafness and Hearing Loss in Primary Care. I'm Dr. Davina Marion, a GP specialty registrar currently based in Greenwich, South East London, and the RCGP national clinical champion for the spotlight project, Deafness and Hearing Loss. In our first podcast, we spoke to Linda Parton, a patient with hearing loss, and an audiologist, Frankie Oliver, who also works for Action Hearing Loss Charity. In this podcast, we have two new guests, Dr. Graham Easton, a GP with an interest in ENT and a professor of communication skills at Barts and the London School of Medicine Dentistry, where he runs workshops for students on hearing impairment, and Dr. Krish Ramdu, who's an ENT surgeon, but now a GP specialty registrar and a clinical entrepreneur for NHS England. Thank you for both for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here.
Hi.
So, Dr. Graham, I've read your fantastic book, The Appointment, and you speak about one of your consultations with a patient having hearing difficulties. From your experience of working as a GP and with your interest in this field of deafness and hearing loss, what tips would you give your GP colleagues during consultations with patients with hearing loss?
Well, if you consider that the average GP is seeing at least four patients a day with hearing loss that's sufficient to interfere with their ability to communicate with ease, it's something we see commonly. And it's important. It's central to our patients' health and well-being, just as important losing hearing as it is losing sight or balance or any other sense. And I suppose my main point would be, have it high on your agenda. Everything else follows. There's nothing of rocket science about what I'm going to say about communicating with people with hearing loss, but it's got to be something that's in your mind, and also trying to imagine what it must be like for someone with hearing loss to navigate the system, to come into a GP surgery. We get our students, first-year medical students, to wear earplugs and try having a conversation. And it's an amazing way to get them to sort of empathise and think about some of the practical issues. Anyway, the basics, I would say, are gain attention, make sure that someone is aware that you're trying to talk to them. That might mean tapping them gently on the arm if they aren't looking at you. But then face-to-face communication. A lot of people with hearing loss will want to see your lips. They'll be reading your lips, even if they've got a hearing aid. It may not be working to give them perfect hearing. Make sure that the light's okay. You know, sometimes people are in dark rooms. You can't see properly. Certainly, watch the whole thing of turning to face away and looking at your computer. But don't cover your mouth. I don't know whether you have this. I certainly sometimes sort of cover my mouth
do.
A bit.
Yes.
And it's. You know, it's easily done, and actually just to be aware that actually that can be like putting a barrier up. I think the other thing that I've seen is, and I've done this myself, doctors have a tendency to shout or to talk more loudly and slowly to people with hearing loss. And actually, if you've got a hearing aid, that can distort the sound and might be uncomfortable, but it also looks aggressive potentially. So the advice generally is to use your normal speaking voice and volume, just speak clearly. Check that you've been understood. Look for those cues of people with that glazed look, perhaps, that shows they haven't quite understood or heard what you said, or perhaps an inappropriate response to something that you've said. We've got to be on the lookout for people who may not know they've got hearing loss. And don't just keep repeating stuff if someone can't understand, just saying it louder and louder. Try saying it in a different way. Don't waffle, get to the point. That helps because it's exhausting listening, trying to listen to someone if you've got hearing loss. And of course, writing things down can be helpful sometimes. But I think bottom line, be patient and think of what it must be like to try and navigate the system.
That's very useful, Graham, learning about these really top tip communication tips. And as you said, first year medical students are starting to learn this now. So it's not just GPs, GP
no.
trainees, it's starting it earlier in your career.
Can't be too early, to be honest.
Yeah. Mm. I totally agree. So I understand you are part of the NICE Guideline Committee for Hearing Loss in Adults Assessment and Management. Would you discuss the signs and red flags GPs should be aware of when assessing a patient with hearing loss?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a fascinating learning experience for me to be on that committee, particularly working with people with hearing loss and hearing impairment. I learned so much, even after years of working as a GP. I think the first thing I would say is that, of course, as GPs, we're used to sort of checking and excluding the common treatable causes of hearing loss, so earwax, otitis externa, otitis media, middle ear effusions related to a recent ERTI, upper respiratory tract infection. And we can deal with that, no problem. The thing is, when there's no obvious cause for the hearing loss, having ruled out those sort of things, there's a very clear recommendation from the committee, which was don't delay. Refer to audiology if you're not sure what the cause is, because a lot there is some evidence that GPs are sort of delaying until things get worse. So that's the first thing to say. But yes, there are red flags that we need to be looking out for serious or even life-threatening conditions that are potentially treatable. The list is long. You can look them up. We all know where to go to look those up. So I'm not going to pretend to cover all of them at all. Mm-hmm. But I suppose here are the key ones. And Krish can perhaps talk further about other aspects of this in a minute. But the first thing is sudden onset or rapidly progressive hearing loss is a red flag. So sudden onset is defined as over a period of 3 days or less. And within the last 30 days. So if they've come to you within 30 days of one of these periods, that's an acute ontological emergency and they need to be seen immediately at A&E or by the ENT team. And the reason is that there are all sorts of potentially treatable causes. It could be autoimmune disease, it could be chronic infection, it could be a rapidly expanding vestibular schwannoma, it could be a stroke, in which case obviously follow the stroke pathway. If it's more than 30 days ago, so still rapid hearing loss over 3 days, more than 30 days ago that it happened, they still need to be seen urgently in A&E. That's the advice, within 2 weeks. And then this idea of rapidly progressing hearing loss, so maybe not sudden over 3 days or less, but somewhere between 4 to 90 days of rapidly progressing hearing loss, they still need to be seen urgently. And delaying any of these referrals could lead to sort of increased morbidity. They need to be investigated and treated. The other key immediate referral that's required is a unilateral hearing loss with additional sort of localizing signs or symptoms. So for example, altered sensation in the face or facial droop. It could be, for example, something like an aggressive cholesteatoma, which is this abnormal buildup in the middle ear or the mastoid spaces of epithelial cells and keratinocytes, which can be invasive and horrible, or a tumor, or even a stroke. So those people need to be seen immediately too. And then the final sort of immediate referral advice is for otalgia, ear pain, and otorrhea, discharging ear with hearing loss in an immunocompromised patient or someone with diabetes, for example, if they're not responding to treatment over 72 hours. And they need immediate referral because it could be a sign of necrotizing otitis externa, which used to be called malignant otitis externa. And that's where otitis externa extends and invades the skull base and cranial nerve, so it's potentially really unpleasant.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to just highlight, make sure you refer early. That's the key point in this whole podcast there.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you, Graham. Krishan, so welcome. I know you were ENT surgeon before.
Yep.
So as an ENT surgeon regularly receiving referrals from GPs, what tips would you recommend for GPs dealing with patients with hearing loss? And in what ways can primary and secondary care work together more efficiently?
So I think Graham, he did a great job of actually listing out what are the referral criteria. And actually, you know, from sitting on both sides of the fence, having been an ENT registrar at quite a senior level in London and now switching over to general practice, we're able to deal with those referrals. But I think in the otology clinic, and if we take that rather than the whole ENT, is the majority of the cases coming through aren't actually life-threatening. So we deal with the red flags. But the thing I would say, and you know, when I was receiving referrals, is yes, we would tick off those lists, make sure we've dealt appropriately with the red flags, whether they've gone for an MRI scan, etc. But what I always used to feel was that we would deal with that red flag and then they would go back to the GP. And now sitting on the other side of the fence, I think is when you get that referral back that's saying, okay, all your red flags have been ruled out, is that patient actually still has an issue. They presented you to you for a problem with their ear or with their hearing. And I think the key as a sitting in the GP environment is actually, well, let's start to think outside the box and let's say, well, okay, if someone has come in who's presented, we've ruled out all the red flags. Hearing loss, as we know, can manifest in a number of different ways. It's related to falls, social isolation, depression, and is the biggest modifiable risk factor for dementia. And I think the key is finding that balance. So where we get secondary and primary care working together is, yes, in primary care, we need to refer in. But actually in primary care, so that we're not just referring every patient who comes in with a hearing loss, let's think outside. Is there something else that we can do earlier in the pathway or identify earlier in the pathway? So if someone does present, say, with feeling a bit lonely, not communicating with you as you would have expected over a period of time, you might just think, well, actually, there might be a hearing loss. And why don't we get them straight into audiology rather than wait to for the red flags to present?
Now that's a useful insight because you've worked both in secondary and primary care. Mm. But a key thing is to look at all the risk factors and think about why they possibly could have hearing loss to get to the cause of it.
Yes.
Yeah. So I understand you're also a founder of a healthcare startup involved in ear care and wax treatments. Please, would you tell us more and about the importance of earwax removal?
Yes, certainly. So as I said in my intro, so I'm part of the NHS England Clinical Entrepreneur Programme. And with that, I was able to think of a solution, which the pathway to access hearing care is actually quite disjointed and difficult for patients. They go from the GP to the audiologist. If the audiologist finds there's wax, they have to go back to the GP. We're no longer offering that service. They then have to go into ENT, ENT remove it, back to the GP, and then finally onto the audiologist. So what I wanted to try and do was develop a solution which kind of brings that all together, but in a innovative way, using technology, and ultimately better for the patient. And it's a solution which we call Timper Health, but it's born out of the NHS. The NHS are actually, it's a formal NHS spin-out. But it clips onto your smartphone, allows you to look in the ear, take a picture at high definition, do wax removal, do a screening hearing test, and create a hearing health record for that patient. So that at any point of that journey, that digital record can be sent either to the ENT specialist, or the kit has been designed that it can be used by healthcare assistants or nurses, so the GP can review it and appropriately refer. And I think the key part, which I think, is that we were looking at the wax pathway and everyone's going into the hospital. So that's a relatively safe procedure. The importance of it is wax is normal for every individual, but it does, you mentioned it as one of the first causes of someone coming in for hearing loss, but it affects about 30 to 40% of people. And I think the importance of it being assessed and removed allows you then to progress management. And I think what I wanted to aim from developing that technology was to make care more accessible to patients, and also patients who are in nursing homes, for example. There was a patient who, and this really struck home to me, the impact that this can have. And it's a very simple example, but there was a patient who we're trialling currently in nursing homes. It was an 89-year-old lady who was deaf in one ear, and in her other ear, she was waiting on the pathway to get earwax removal done. So we went into the home, and it just so happened her daughter was there with her. And we had trained up the HCA to remove the wax. She removed the wax, and the daughter said, well, let me just see if she can hear me better. And she said, I love you, Mum. And her mum replied back, I love you too. And her daughter just burst out crying. And for me, that made just that simple intervention. And if we had had to take that patient who was already on the pathway of waiting to have wax removal done and move her from there to the GP, and on that pathway I described, the fact that we were able to deliver it in her own environment, in an environment that she's used to, made me realise that actually there's a big chance for this to help in those environments as well.
Can I ask you a question, Chris?
Of course, yeah.
I just want to know a little bit more about what you put in the ear. So this is a camera on one end of it, but
yeah,
it's also able to do wax removal.
Yeah, so the wax removal, the microsuction part, is done with a normal suction probe, which is done in the hospital. But what you're enabling yourself to do is, rather than irrigation, which was traditionally done in GPs, where you're blindly putting water into the ear, it allows you to look on your screen and perform the wax removal as is done in the hospital.
That's very innovative. Thing you've created there, and it sounds like it's more accessible than having a microsuction kit in your GP practice, which can be quite expensive. Yeah. So that sounds really good. Thank you for listening, and if you enjoy this podcast, do listen to part 1-2, where we speak to a patient with hearing loss and an audiologist who also works for Action Hearing Loss Charity. Do visit our resources on deafness and hearing loss on rcgp.org.uk/hearing loss, and thank you both Krish and Graham for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.